From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Hurricane Jose causes damage to homes and power lines in Antigua. The leaders of Britain's overseas territories want less power for governors, and the experts praise Y2K effort in most of the Caribbean. I am Keith Stone Graves, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. The islands of the northeastern Caribbean are feeling the effects of Hurricane Jose this evening as the 10th Atlantic weather system sliced through the area, dumping several inches of rain. In Antigua, there are reports of the hurricane hurling debris and snapping power lines. Shortly before coming on the air, I spoke to Phil Mulling, the deputy director in the Office of Disaster Services.
We have reports from straight across the country, particularly in the eastern and southern side, where you have a number of properties damaged and to some extent fence and trees down. We have just received reports that there are two pieces of main road blocked in the Pickett's area and on the road leading into Barnesville, New Winchops. We have one confirmed death. It's not clear this time whether or not the cause of death was actually by the hurricane.
A word on Barbuda?
The last thing we heard from them, that everything there was A-OK. They had three shelters open and only one was occupied.
And hurricane warnings continue for Montserrat, St. Kitts and Nevis, Anguilla, St. Martin, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. and British Virgin Islands. Robert Matthews is the acting chairman of the BVI's National Emergency Operations Committee. He told me that the territory is on full alert as Hurricane Jose approaches.
Biff Island Airport, which is a major airport, and all the airports in the territory, were officially closed at 12 p.m. today. And all the hotels have been providing reports to the preparedness on their preparedness activities. So I think it is fair to say that the island is in a very, very high state of preparedness and alertness as we prepare for Hurricane Jose.
Robert Matthews in the BVI. Meanwhile, St. Lucia is hosting a conference on disaster preparedness in key economic sectors such as agriculture, forestry, and fisheries in small island developing states. It's been sponsored by the Rome-based United Nations Agency, the Food and Agriculture Organization. Eleanor Jones is the Managing Director of Environmental Solutions. She has some concerns about the attention given to the economic sector about disaster issues.
A lot of that has to do with a level of understanding and awareness of what is possible and also what is necessary. Each year that we have an event, we have to divert funds from development into repairs and reconstruction. And what we're hoping to do with this workshop is to sensitize the decision makers, or certainly sensitize those persons in the decision-making process, so that they can carry forward some actual, precise, practical steps towards integrating disaster mitigation into the development process.
Eleanor Jones. The leaders of Britain's overseas territories have ended their two-day meeting with the new minister responsible for the region, Baroness Patricia Scotland, in London. They looked at several of the issues that were outlined in the white paper presented earlier this year by Foreign Office Minister Robin Cook. It included reforms to the laws on homosexuality and tighter controls in the lucrative offshore financial services sector. One of the key points to come out of the meeting is that the overseas territories would prepare and submit their proposals for constitutional reforms after consultations with citizens in the islands. Montserrat's Chief Minister David Brandt told me shortly after the conclusion of the meeting that constitutional reforms are long overdue, including the conduct of British governors.
The governors' powers are too excessive in our territories. We believe that we should have a say in the appointment of governors. We believe that we should have a right to report on governors on a yearly basis. And if a governor's tenure is going to be extended, that we should be consulted in such a manner. And many of the powers which he holds, that he should exercise them not only in consultation with the government, but on the recommendation of the government.
And the chairman of the UK Overseas Territories Association has suggested that it would be better for Britain to impose any reforms on the laws of homosexuality by way of an order in council from London rather than waiting on the governments to do it, given the strong opposition, in particular from the churches. What was the basis of the discussion on the homosexuality issue?
The most countries stood their ground. We will not introduce such legislation into our parliaments. We do not believe that Britain should impose it either. They have the right to do it, and it is up to them to do it. We cannot stop them once we remain a dependent territory.
Are the leaders of the overseas territories any closer to settling the question of money laundering in some of the territories and their use as tax havens for drug traffickers?
All leaders are against money laundering and illegal activities. What we are against is for the exchange of information in matters that are not criminal. This morning, a Treasury officer came and said that there should be no distinction between tax avoidance and tax evasion. And we found it outstanding. Any first-term student in tax law knows that there's a division. We feel that some mechanism has to be worked out, that we could deal with the criminal element, but that persons who do legitimate business, that their privacy should be protected.
On Surat's Chief Minister David Brandt, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. The Caribbean community CARICOM has launched what it's calling a regional charter on health and aging. The regional body wants to have in place a more organized approach when dealing with the integration of senior citizens. According to CARICOM officials, the majority of the regional population is under the age of 25. But the figures show a rapidly expanding elderly population. And it's estimated that by the year 2025, persons over 60 will make up a little under a fifth of the population in the Caribbean. From Georgetown, Colin Smith reports.
CARICOM's Deputy Secretary General, Dr. Carla Barnett, who was one of the speakers at this morning's launching, said these facts will have widespread implications in many areas, such as health care and the composition of the labor force. Dr. Barnett said the launching of the charter was therefore very timely.
The challenge for this generation of policymakers, therefore, is to strive to ensure that older persons experience the quality of life necessary to maintain personal well-being, which will enable them to share with the region the benefit of their experience, knowledge, and skills.
The launch of the charter was to be part of the opening ceremony of a meeting of Caribbean ministers responsible for human and social development. Hurricane conditions affecting travel in the region forced the postponement of that meeting.
Colin Smith reporting. Two Caribbean countries top the list of the latest U.S. Customs report on cocaine seizures involving airlines operating out of the region. And they're both in the northwestern part of the region. One of them is Jamaica, with a little under two-thirds of the seizures. Kimberly Andrews has been reading excerpts from the report.
Jamaica remains at the top of the list as the number one destination from which cocaine is seized from airline passengers, the report said. However, that does not necessarily mean that the offenders were Jamaican nationals, as it may sound. Local police sources have already established that there is a growing drug link between Jamaica, the Bahamas and Colombia. Narcotics Chief Senior Superintendent Beresford Spence has said that Jamaica has been used as a transshipment point for years that has escalated in recent times.
This year, so far, we arrest 135 foreigners who have visited going out with drugs, as against 84 Jamaicans. So they come down for a couple of days, or some come as tourists or pretending to be tourists, but the real purpose of coming is to traffic drugs.
According to Mr. Spence, there are two ways in which drugs enter Jamaica, the drip system and airdrops. With the drip system, large quantities of cocaine arrive on high-speed boats, stashed away and leave the island in smaller quantities with couriers. The second method, airdrops, is when the cocaine is dropped by an aircraft into the sea and picked up later by boats. Senior Superintendent Beresford Spence believes there are adequate measures in place to help deter traffickers.
At the port, we put in place the canine dogs, we have the airport police, and we have the narcotics police who do profiling of passengers. And those, based on the trend that come under scrutiny, would be taken aside and given a search.
However, the narcotic team feel anything more they should do will be intelligence-driven.
Kimberly Andrew. Caribbean countries are doing better with their year 2000 compliancy preparations than was originally thought. That's according to experts at Miami University's North-South Center. They say that countries such as Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and Barbados have all launched websites describing their progress in sectors such as healthcare systems and banking. We'll be talking to one of the Y2K experts who've been conducting seminars throughout the region. Several countries have started media campaigns to get the word out. The government of the Bahamas says since last year, they've been pushing the issue of Y2K compliance in both the public and private sectors. Economic Development Minister Carl Bethel says at the moment, every bank in the Bahamas is now Y2K ready.
And the same can be said of most, if not all, of the financial service sector operatives. The government itself is absolutely Y2K ready. The data processing unit of the Bahamas government has gone around and personally checked every single computer for Y2K compatibility in the government service.
Well, Professor Anthony Bryan, an international relations expert at the North-South Center, was a member of the team working on the Y2K program in the region. I asked him, how prepared are most Caribbean countries?
What we have found out, simply based on having a series of seminars throughout the region with national coordinators, with journalists, with the technical people, is that the preparations in crucial areas such as ports, airports, public and private agencies, they are doing very, very well. And they are starting to focus now on contingency plans to try to deal with possible failures of critical systems.
Why is it necessary for Caribbean countries to inform their citizens about what has been done so far in both the public and private sectors?
Well, I think the bottom line is, panic. People will panic unnecessarily. There will be hoarding of supplies if they don't think that the food supplies are correct. There will be problems with electrical facilities and water and things like this. And if those happen in the slightest way, I think the general state of panic will be there. And that's what one wants to avoid.
Is the message getting out to international travelers and investors about the readiness of the region for the year 2000?
Well, I think on the international front, a number of countries could do a bit more to inform certainly international travelers and investors about their readiness. And this can be done very simply by completing a standard questionnaire from the International Y2K Cooperation Center. And this is to be done in October and November. A lot of Caribbean countries are not visible on that website as yet.
Professor Anthony Bryan. And finally, Caribbean nationals who have no way of getting permanent residency in the United States can try their luck in a special visa lottery program organized by the government. The system gives a degree of hope to nationals at home and abroad who may wish to settle permanently in the U.S. But as Bevan Springer reports from New York, the deadline is fast approaching.
The chances are about 1 in 200, but this should not deter West Indians who want to set up shop in America. Recent changes to U.S. immigration law make it more difficult to settle here, but the diversity program has been founded to give opportunities to natives from countries other than the main source of immigration to the U.S. The U.S. government makes available about 55,000 permanent residence visas each year through a computer-generated lottery drawing. A permanent residence visa is commonly referred to as a green card. This visa class entitles the holder to live and work in the United States permanently. And within 3 to 5 years, the green card holder may apply for citizenship. Winston Tucker, a Caribbean attorney who represents a grassroots advocacy group in New York, is encouraging all and sundry to apply.
What happened is that out of all the applications that go in, the IMS selects and sends out notices to about 100,000 people saying that they have been selected, and then the first 55,000 or 50,000 who complete the process before the visas run out, then gets the green card.
The green cards are awarded to nationals from countries with low migration patterns to the United States. These include all Caribbean countries except Jamaica, Haiti, and the Dominican Republic. Bevan Springer in New York City for BBC Caribbean Report.
And before we go, a look at our main stories once again. Hurricane Jose causes damage to homes and power lines in Antigua. And the leaders of Britain's overseas territories want less power for governors. And that's it for BBC Caribbean Report. Just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.org. www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
And you can join us at 11.05, 11.15 and 12.10 GMT for our next morning programs. I am Keith Stonegrave saying goodbye from London.